it's about time. Sairam Swamis.
All our beautiful forms of Swamis, beloved self, Sairam. And that's the truth. We're all one. I know some of us don't experience it all the time, but all of us get a glimpse now and then. And the trick is to remember who we are, what is true and what is false. And we'll be sharing all kinds of things with you today. Hopefully you're ready.
They must be. We're here. Swami was very specific when we first met him. First thing he said was, "What is your name?" Kalasu. No! You are God. You are Swami. Know this now.
And ever since. Three faces has humanity.
We are the Atma.
We are the Atma.
And have always been.
We We have no form and no name.
Name, form, illusion.
In love and in true devotion, we're playing Maya's game.
Remember, we're only playing.
While singing God's sweet name. Three faces has humanity. See them clear and you can be free from Maya's dream of ignorance. Come on, everybody, sing it with us. Free from Maya's dream of ignorance. Once more. Free from Maya's dream of ignorance. There is the one that you think you are, the one that others think you are. But then there is the one you really are. You know who that is? Then there is the one you really are. Come on, sing it with us loud. Then there is the one you really are. God himself, the omnipresence, and Christ his loving Son, told him to be alike to all, for all are only one. Christ, my loving Son, all are only one. All are only one. All are only
Your life will be of no avail if with your dying breath you fail to chant the holy Om, or God's sweet name.
So let's all do it.
Chant the holy Om, or God's sweet name. One more time. Chant the holy Om, or God's sweet name. So start by walking in the light. Then you'll see the lights inside. Soon you'll know that you are the light. Soon you'll know that you are the light. Soon you'll know that you are the light. God himself, the omnipresence, and Christ his loving Son, told him to be alike to all, for all are only one. Christ, my loving Son, all are only one. All are only one. All are only one.
Here's a song that usually when we sang for Swami, we did like big concerts, you know, for summer school and different functions. And, you know, there were usually about thousands of people sitting out there. And after about 40, 45 minutes, Swami used to lean over very quietly.
He'd sit on stage with us, and he'd lean over and go, "Any new song?"
That means make one up right now in the spur of the moment. Be empty. I showed you how to be like Muralee. So let's have a song flow. This is one of the songs that happened.
And the guitar would just start. Jonamu would start singing and playing. Then we'd join in. And then if we got stuck for words, Swami leaned over and filled in the words. So
who wrote the song, right? This is one of them. And this is another bhajan style, so please sing along, if you feel like it. No pressure.
Just have fun.
Are we having fun yet?
Yes.
Come on, are we having fun yet?
Yes.
All right, that's better. Swami said, without joy, every moment of our life, it's not worth anything.
It's not living.
Not living. It's existence. It's not worth a damn.
New song?
New song. Sai, you are in my heart, as I am in your heart. Forever we're one heart, called Soham Kala. Everybody. Sai, you are in my heart, as I am in your heart. Forever we're one heart, called Soham Kala. Sai Rudaya Vihari, we're Dharma and Shanti, we're Satya and Prema, omnipresent one. Soham. You are the ocean, Lord, and I am your wave. You are the mountain, loving,
I am your cave.
You are the blue sky, and I am your star. Sigh, divine mother, one we always are. Sigh, you are in my heart. Let's sing it. As I am in your heart. Forever we're one heart, called Soham Kala. Louder, come on. Sai, you are in my heart, as I am in your heart. Forever we're one heart, called Soham Kala. Sai Rudaya Vihari, your Dharma and Shanti. We're such a prema, omnipresent one. So high. You are the love tree, Lord, and I'm your clinging vine. You're the divine poet, love, and my life is your rhyme. You are the father, sighing,
I'm your loving child.
We are omnipresence. And that's where Swami stopped the song. And he said,
How do you know this omnipresence?
Just like this, in the middle of it. How do you know this
and
omnipresence?
And Janma very dutifully turned to Swami and said, by your grace alone, Swami.
And Swami goes, ah. Yes.
Continue.
Omnipresent, from where
all has come. Sai, you are in my heart, as I am in your heart. Forever we're one heart, called Soham Kala. Let me hear it. Sai, you are in my heart, as I am in your heart. Forever we're one heart, called Soham Kala. Sai Rudaya Vihari, we're Dharma and Shanti, we're Satya, we're Prema, omnipresent one.
Soham.
Take all of that beautiful energy and the love and put it inside. We enjoy it, but take this energy, put it inside to finding out and investigating of who we really are. Okay, let's get down to brass tacks here. Why are we here? Why are we here? Why are you all here? You are Swami. Why are you here?
It's cutting through all the
stuff. We're cutting through all the bull.
Okay, what we're going to share with you these next 2 days is what Swami threw at us.
Right from the very beginning.
30 some odd years. He's been doing this to us. This is what he taught us.
We're telling you our personal experience and the teachings that he gave us. We know that it is different than what he taught other people.
And we're going to share these lessons and experiences with you. Now, I want you all to just take it with a lump of grain of salt. Follow your inner Swami. Whatever these two bodies share with you, if it feels right, great. Try it. Don't try it. If it feels right, practice something. All right?
And we'll tell you again.
But always follow your inner Swami. Swami even taught us, don't even follow the physical Swami. He says, I will trick you.
He says, where do you think Maya is? She's sitting right on my lap.
The closer you are to me, the thicker the Maya.
Be careful.
All right?
In other words, I'll give you an example. We're in the bathroom, staying in this backyard, right? Joel and us, we're in the bathroom. Swami walks in and said, oh, can I borrow a razor? Think about it. How human and how undivine, right? Quote, unquote, in our perception, right? Of course, that's our ignorance, but after a while, being around Swami in the physical,
you forget.
You forget. You think of him as a beautiful guru, a nice man, a wonderful personality, and you love to be close because it feels very nice. But then you say to yourself, yeah, I hope Swami doesn't know what I just ate, or I did this, hope Swami doesn't find out. I mean, how ridiculous is that, you know? How silly. But we do this. If you watch some of the people that are very close to Swami, if we've talked to many of them, they come and confide in us, right?
Oh, I hope Swami,
Swami doesn't find out what I did.
I mean, these are the ones that sit on the veranda.
The VIP, quote-unquote.
And they come and sit with us, God, and confess their confessions. And I'll just share with you, I hope Swami doesn't find out about it. It's like, huh? What?
What?
Where isn't Swami?
Yes.
If all are one, and we are omnipresent.
Okay, in every religion, from the very beginning, it has said, in the beginning, there is God. From God, everything originated. I don't care what religion is, it is all the same. Right? And from God, everything was created. And God is love. That's it. That's the beginning and the end of every religion.
So
everything
who are
else.
You? What are you and what is this all about?
And everything else is man-made. Dogma. No matter what it is. That's why Swami tells you and all of us always, and from the beginning he told us, he said, no amount of worship, no amount of ritual, and no amount of your investigation in the physical will ever get you to the self. It will not work.
He said,
it's a good stepping stone, and we all have to walk through the devotion, the love, the experience of a religious gathering, the meditation. He said, all of it.
Even the Vedas say, no amount of devotion or worship will get you there. But we all must walk through it. And the idea is through it. We have to get past it.
We have to grow up. Time to grow up. Are you ready to grow up?
Swami, from the very, very beginning, taught us the Brahma Vidya, whether I wanted to know it or not. Because when I first met Swami, his love was so tremendous. I had never felt love that magnanimous.
Intense.
And intense before. I didn't know it existed on this plane. When I saw him, I went, finally, I found God. I put Swami here. All Swami did for the next 2-3 years was chisel that statue off.
That pedestal.
And put it here. And I fought him tooth and nail because I want him to take care of me.
Like all good emotional bodies.
We all want Daddy to take care of us, okay? Divine Father to take care of us. Swami, my very first interview with Swami. That's when the battle, our personal Mahabharata, because it is a Mahabharata. And if you don't make it your first priority, enjoy the world. Indulge in it full on. But my first interview with Swami, he took me into the room. The body was just shaking. He held my hands and looked into my eyes. And the love was so tremendous and the closeness was so that the body was shaking. Tears were just... And he looked and he goes,
What took you so long to find me?
Oh. God knows, I've been trying, you know.
What took you so long to find you? And he went like this. He said, for hundreds of and what I'm sharing with you, he said later to me,
for
share
all
this
of us.
For all. You are all. And when I send you out into the world, what I have shared with you is for all to experience.
As we are sharing it, you are experiencing it.
For hundreds of thousands of lifetimes, you've been listening to this. And he touched.
To the wrong voice.
The voice of the mind, he said. That mind has told you that you are not beautiful, that you are not divine, that you are not Swami. And he said it just like that. At that moment, I thought, hundreds of thousands of lifetimes.
Actually, 1 million lifetimes.
I've listened to this when I've always been that. He said, I'm here to tell you, all of us, that you are divine, you are beautiful, you are Swami, and have always been. He said to me, God is all-powerful, all-loving, and all-inclusive, and you have always been that. Don't listen to this again.
So right now, all of us, at this moment, let's identify how we can all talk about this idea or this word God.
We've shared with other many, many groups before, and when we get on the topic of God, we all have different perceptions of God, because truly God is beyond the mind. God came first. We created the mind. So the mind thinks, okay, God, oh, I'm just a part of, or I'm a little part, or I'm this or that.
So let's start with the basics, just to get through it, okay? Very bottom line, what Swami taught us in the very beginning, and we're going to start with it, and then we're going to backtrack.
And we'll make sure that you all agree on this. When then, we talk of God, we will identify God as all-loving. Can we agree on that?
Something that is all-loving.
All-inclusive, because there is nothing
is
not God.
And all-powerful.
Powerful. Powerful enough to manifest
create all of this
creation. Correct?
Can we agree on that? Does that sound reasonable?
Now, for many, many yugas, generations, lifetimes, saints and sages have walked the earth and said, you are God. Swami, once in a while an avatar will come, if you're fortunate in your lifetime, and say, you are God. And the mind will tell you, yeah,
no,
just a little part. You're not all. You tell the mind to shut up.
Okay, let's go back down to the very beginning. What Swami taught us, right off the bat, the very first thing. We walked in the very first time with him physically, and he gave a discourse. And this was after, if you read the Stepping Stone books, you'll understand the Leela involved with it. But he walked in, and he said, listen. He said, when we were alone with him, he said, this is what I want you to know.
And you have to understand, when he talks to the masses, he talks much different to the masses, and he talks to you personally.
Or
because
one-on-one.
Basically, when he talks to the masses, he just wants everyone to be good and not make any
more karma.
Bad karma for themselves.
Stop more karma from happening for each of us. Okay, we walked in, and he said, listen. He went like this to our bodies, and then to himself, he said, all illusion.
Bubble
not real.
On the ocean.
Bubble on the ocean, not real. The only reality is the I am, the inner awareness that we are, the consciousness that is. That is the only reality. Or the inner Swami is the same thing, is all the same. He said, always and only listen to that inner Swami. That consciousness is endless and eternal. Everything else is changeable. The truth is, there's only one playing the game of the many. That means there's only the one consciousness that is perfect and absolute and complete. And everything else is a limited form of consciousness that believes and deludes itself to be separate from the consciousness, which is impossible. He said, it is impossible to divide consciousness. It is impossible. Therefore, we are one, are always and forever one. We have never not been anything except one. And everything that we are experiencing is my dream, your dream, our dream, as the eternal consciousness, no more, no less. You are not even here, and neither am I.
And that is the truth.
Now, when you hear this the very first time, you go, what? Your mind goes, what the hell are you talking about? You know, I mean, really.
And the mind will go, I'm here.
I'm here. It's me. You know, I'm. And he goes, no, illusion, lie. That's not you.
Very simple. All name and form, he said to us, is illusion.
On any level.
No matter what loka, Indraloka, Vayakunta, whatever it is. Whatever.
Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, all illusion.
Illusion. Name and form, illusion.
Because it is a limited form of consciousness, believing itself to be a certain separate something.
And it's temporary.
And it's temporary. Even if it lasts a million years, it is temporary in eternity. And that consciousness that is eternal, that we are, have always been, and can never not be, is eternal. Everything else is temporary, and therefore the game, or the Maya, or the illusion. You know, Swami told us, the greatest power of Maya that it has confused us with is the belief that, and here's a question for you guys to check out for yourself. When you say to yourself, I have knowledge, I know something that you know, right? We've all learned different things, and we have perceptions, and we know things, right? I know something, right? Swami said, how is it possible that something that is an illusion has a result of something that is real? That is impossible. So therefore, all of your knowledge that you believe you have as knowledge is part of the illusion. So what is real about it?
And what isn't spiritual?
And he said, what is spiritual? If God is everything and everything is the one, what is not perfect and beautiful? What is bad? What is wrong? What is good? What is right?
They are
right?
All learning experiences.
And here we come to something that you all need to hear. We heard it firsthand from Swami. And it's something, if you understand this, it will change your life.
And he asked us to share this.
Always.
He walked into the room like this, beating himself. Look at this. All you do is beat yourself up with shame.
Guilt,
worry, fear,
anger.
I didn't give you these signs to beat yourself up.
For the rest of your life? They are road signs like stop, go, yield, red light, green light.
Slow down.
One way.
But
that's
we tend to carry them with us our entire life.
And then he said, listen, I want you to know right now, right here, that you have never done anything wrong or nothing bad has ever been done by you or by anyone else in this creation. What? He said, yes. Why? And he said, do you believe in karma? So, do you believe in karma? Everybody.
Yes.
What is karma? What is the idea of karma? Action, reaction, sound, resound, right? So, if you believe in karma, if something happens to you, let's say you are a young lady and your father molests you when you were a young child. Oh, this is a terrible thing. My dad molested me.
And you carry with this your whole life, how you were abused and molested. And you carry this pain, this...
suffering.
This victim.
Why me? I'm a beautiful person. Why would it happen to me?
Yet you believe in karma. We have to ask you...
What's your problem?
What is your problem?
If you believe in karma and you understand the idea of karma, then you should say... Oh, that hurts so good, Swami.
Thank you, Swami.
Thank you.
Ouch, but
glad
I
the
my
karma
lesson.
Is finished.
I've had my experience. I must have done something really terrible to my father for him to react that way.
I must have done the same thing to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my reaction. Ow.
You go, ouch, thank you.
Thank you,
karma
Swami.
Karma pay.
Let's move on.
Done.
And he said, everything that you have ever experienced, good, bad, right, wrong, was always and only
a learning experience.
And if you did not learn by it, you will repeat it until you learn from it. He said, that is the school system of this world. Like in school, if you miss a class or you skip class or you flunk.
You flunk. Have to repeat.
You repeat. It's the same.
And we've repeated many, 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 many lifetimes.
Swami said, for us to even want to talk about this stuff or even hear about it or want to listen to it, we must have had 1 million lifetimes of experiences. Think about it.
So we must have all pretty much done a lot.
So who is to judge whom and about what and for what? If you understand that killing somebody is bad, chances are you were a murderer.
And the victim.
Otherwise you would not know. How do we learn? Come on, tell me, how do we learn? By experience, right? Have we ever learned by somebody telling us a sweet word? Only the very brightest ones, and hardly any. You can count them on one hand in all of creation, right? So therefore, if you tell a child the fire is hot, the child will not believe you. It'll stick his hand in the fire, then it burns and says, ouch, fire is hot. Yes, yes, fire is hot. Because fire is pretty when you look at it, is it not? All right. Same for all of us with all the other learning experience, whether it's sex, food, drugs, or whatever. It doesn't make any difference. They're just experiences, guys. Because our true self, our Paramatma consciousness, our being state, cannot experience. We need 5 senses, a human form, or some form to experience through. That's why we have it. That's why we are in the physical form. Now, many of us in this creation, we believe that if we are good, we meditate and we do our sadhana and do our service, just like Swami said, and we bow down to worship our deities, that'll take care of it. Yes, it'll be a very nice, pleasant life, and you'll probably have some very good karma coming, but it's still your karma. Why? Because you believe yourself to be separate. You believe yourself to be an individual. You believe yourself to be John, Harry, Jane, you know, Alice, whatever. As long as you believe the lie of the Maya separation, which is an absolute impossibility, you are caught in the game. And you cannot play the game. Swami said, nothing in this world here is here to harm you or do you harm or stop you in any way, shape, or form. He said, everything is here only to help you expand your consciousness back to the oneness. That's all.
So are we ready to be God, to be Swami?
No. I see shaking heads, no.
Are we still want Swami to take care of us? No! It's
time
to
grow
up!
What does it mean to be Swami? You're going to put on an orange robe and grow an afro? That's going to be very silly, right?
Once in a while, a saint or sage will walk the planet and say, you are God, you are divine. And you go, uh-huh, okay, yeah,
okay,
right,
mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, sure.
Yeah, fine.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It's time to take charge and discipline. The key is the mind. Discipline the monkey mind, and you are divine. Know this now. Next lifetime, you may not have an avatar knocking you on the head going, wake up, wake up.
He's not knocking. He's got a big stick, guys. A big stick.
You are and have always been. Silence your mind and you will be that.
The one that was talking is not divine. That's the body and the mind, ego perception.
See, we have a choice. We can play our you can be your, all right. It's black or white.
Swami explained it very simply.
We tend to get caught in this gray region. I remember it so well. It was very comfortable. I love God. I love Swami. And I'm very devout. I worship Swami with all my heart.
Or Jesus or Buddha or whoever.
Whomever. I love the divine out there. And I am dutiful. I am this. I am that. But, and it's the but that gets us in trouble. I'm attached to my wife, my kids, my family, my job,
my wealth, my that.
Oh, my body's not well, or this. Wait a minute.
What happened to karma? What happened to this is a Maya dream?
It is a momentary experience.
Are we not following the basic rules of black or white? You could choose. Right now, we are going to divide this and choose. You either believe yourself to be the body, the mind, the senses, and indulge in this Maya creation. It's beautiful. We created it.
It's God.
There's nothing bad about it. Indulge in it. Believe in it. Be attached.
Immerse yourself completely in it.
Okay? And when you die, you're dead. You're dust. Okay? Or?
Nothing. Empty. Deletion.
You are divine. You are beautiful. You are God. You're all loving, all inclusive, and all powerful. And you are eternal. Choose. Which sounds better?
Worm food?
Or divinity?
Or divine.
Who is not attached because you are walking, living truth of knowing that this is Maya. This is illusion. It's not real. Are you really mother? Are you really father? Are you really aunt, uncle? No.
Son, daughter?
You are playing it. You are actors. You are Atma as actors playing it. So if you choose to be attached, you're asking for pain, sorrow, and misery.
Suffering. This is the Buddha's
teaching.
It's
basic. If I was attached to my... When we were first met Swami, he was very cute. I was really practicing the yogic celibate path. I never would have had children. Swami asked us to get married.
He came in the room very simply one time. He was like this with folded hands. He walks up to us and he says, "Please, you do a favor for Swami?" And we look at Swami and I said, "What is it, Swami?" And he says, "No, just do the favor. Please do the favor." I said, "What is it, Swami?" And he said, "No, just do it for
Swami.
Three
times he asked.
You know, do it for Swami."
He was surprised that Janma just didn't say, "Okay, right away."
And I said, "No, Swami, what the favor you want? What is it?" You know? And very quickly under his breath, he said, with bowed head, he says, "Get married and have children for Swami."
And he goes, "What? I have a plan."
Yes. And we said, "What? This body, Swami? You know this part of it?"
We thought there were enough children who needed love. If anything, we would adopt.
The whole world were our children. We didn't need our child,
quote
unquote.
But he said, "Please get married and have babies for Swami." And we said, he said, "I have a plan. Will you play with Swami?"
And we said, "Well, you know everything. We know
nothing.
So
yes, Swami.
Your will be done." He goes, very happy. Yes, we play.
He was so beautiful. He goes, "I have a plan." He goes, "These are my bodies now. We will play." He says, "One rule. We will have it all, do it all, and play it all. One rule. No attachment to any of it."
"Ever. Can you do this?" He said, "Yes, Swami." He said, "Okay, then we play. Yes."
Very happy. Now there are children, and now there are grandchildren. And sitting back as the watcher, it's beautiful. Because you could sit back and watch the play. Yes, we play it, but we don't indulge in it and believe it.
Here is the difference, okay? Let's say you're a parent, and you have to discipline the child. Discipline is very essential. Without discipline, we have monsters, okay?
As much as we discipline our mind and discipline ourselves, we must discipline the children.
I mean, if you watch Swami, he's very much disciplined. But it's only for you, for us, out of love. It's not for him. He doesn't do it for himself. He's doing it to help us find a balance within ourselves in this experience of a society, because we all live by certain rules that we all adopt as being okay. So, if we want to discipline a child because they did something that we didn't like or we are angry about, they destroyed something, and we get angry inside and then we punish the child.
Who's disciplining the child? Your body, your mind, your ego, or your divine self that's only doing it for the child? That's why they say never raise a hand to a child if you're angry. There's a very disciplined way to discipline them. Come here.
You can spank them. It's not a problem.
Or go to your room.
You
Whatever feels
them.
Right. But discipline is a must.
But do it out of love.
We'll share with you, since we're all here right now, we will share with you. It's strange.
After all these years, we really look back and we understand why Swami made us householders. There was a time where when the children were still little, he said, time to leave the city. We were in Los Angeles. Time to leave the city and move to the mountains of Idaho. And we went, Idaho? Being from California, where's Idaho? Where in Idaho, Swami? He says, don't worry, I will guide. So we said, okay.
Okay.
So we got in the car that spring break and drove through Idaho, went through even Colorado, thinking Colorado, maybe Swami made a mistake. Okay. Colorado, no. We went through Idaho and found ourselves a beautiful little community called McCall and found a piece of land that they wanted far more than what we had to offer. It just felt right. We gave them the offer. They took it.
And then Swami said, you like? We said, yes, Swami, very beautiful.
15 years, we stayed on. Well, yeah. We've been there 20, but for 15 years, we stayed on the mountain playing parents and walking through our experiences. And when he made us householders, I understood how we can be God in the world and not of it. There was a time where I walked into the room. I was so frustrated with Swami. He made us householders. I didn't have the emotional body under control yet, so I was highly strung out. Swami,
PMS,
you,
max.
You made us householders. How much easier it would have been to just be that sadhu in the cave without all of these worries and troubles of this Maya creation that are constantly beating on you.
The bills, the kids,
goes,
you know, the
goes,
husband, you know.
He goes, no, that sadhu must leave the cave at one time and immerse himself or herself in the Maya as a householder.
And share all of his light and understanding and love.
He said, the householder's way is the quickest way.
Not the sannyasi way.
You are working as a group, working things through, and it works a lot quicker than if you're by yourself.
But you have to do it correctly.
Now, this is how we raised the children. And those of you who have some of the children that were in the classroom, we shared a little bit of this with them. And we told them we're going to tell you about this also.
So you're on the hot seat, girls.
We use the kids as experiments because we tried different things that Swami had shown us how to raise them. And there's two simple methods. When the children were just 2 or 3 years old, right off the bat, because we felt, just think if our parents would have taught us this. How easy it would have been to separate body, mind, ego, consciousness from your divine self. All right? So let's say you're at the supermarket and your child throws a tantrum, wants something.
I want this.
Who is this? Who is this having a tantrum? Is this your divine, loving God self that gets loves and kisses? Or is this the ego mind body that's selfish, jealous, and only thinks of himself or herself that gets disciplined and usually sent to your room or punished? Tell me, who is this? At first, our kids looked at us, it's me, Mommy, are you like crazy?
Are you crazy?
No, and I would not accept that. I would not accept them believing that they were fused. Because when we come into this world, we're still fused, believing our divine self is our mind.
The senses,
so what
the emotions,
we did with
the
kids,
thoughts.
We slowly helped them separate and peel both apart. So when they would have a tantrum or they would show signs of selfish, jealousy, or any of the vasanas, we asked them, who is this? Who is being this way? And at that time, they understood Mom and Dad were crazy, so they answered us and said, body, mind, ego, yes. You go take it into the room, and when your divine self wants to come out, it can come out for hugs and kisses. Right off the bat, they consciously were able to separate. Now they're in their late 20s and 30s, and if they show any sign of ego, all I say is, what? And they go, oh, yeah, right, okay. Gone. How simple. And if you start them young, but you must practice this yourself. And if you find yourself yelling at your child or just being selfish,
or yourself, your husband or your wife,
or your husband,
either
or you
way.
Start a fight and your children come up to you and say, Mommy, Daddy, who is this yelling?
Who has to be right?
It's the ego, mind, body. Oh, I want to see my divine mommy or my divine daddy, okay? So you have to practice what you preach. And I remember there was one time I was in the kitchen. I knew I was doing my job. When I was in the kitchen, I had really bad PMS, and I was just grumbling. And little Shanti came up and, Mommy, who is this? And I went, oh. It's the body, sweetheart. It's not your divine self. You're right. You know you've done your work when this happens. Now the other... Simple. God is simple. The mind is complicated.
Love and God are always simple, guys.
When they were very, very little, to teach them that everything is alive, everything is God, because truth is we are just a sea of molecules and atoms floating around, no different than the carpet that you sit on or the chair I am sitting
on. If we break down everything in creation that has name and form, and we break it down to molecular and atomic structure... It's
everything is consciousness. Everything is alive. So when the children were very little, and I'd see Cy Cody just like banging on the glass table or something, boys will be boys. But no. Go, you're hurting the table. Then look, what? You're crazy. Table doesn't hurt. Yes, it does. Put your ear to it. Go on, put your ear.
But they have to be little for this, you know?
You have to be able to trick them. If you start them young, you can trick them.
You play Maya, see?
Go on, put your ear to the table, and I'd go to the other side, and in a different voice, I would say, ow, you're hurting me.
And they go,
did you hear that? Go, put your ear against. Mommy, that, no, go try it. And if Jonimo was there, he'd do it over to the other side, to the point where everything was alive. Everything could feel. And I say, okay, the table does us service. Let's do its service back. Let's clean it. It likes to be cleaned. So we get a little paper towel and the Windex and clean it up. And now put your ear to it. Thank you. Did you hear that? Yeah. From that moment on, we did this with everything, and that's where you have to be on top of them, of it. What you see them abusing or hurting something, give it life. Make it alive to them. Right?
What you're doing is you're disciplining out
to
of love.
To this day, yes, they name their cars. Their homes are immaculate. They respect everything around them to this day, and they're proof that it works. And truth is, when Shanti went to school and the teacher said, a rock is an inanimate object, it has no life. Shanti, yes, it does. It has life, it has feelings. I know, I heard it, I talked to it. And the teacher just went, no, it's not. She came home crying. And I called the school and said, and talked to the teacher. I said, you put that rock under a high-powered microscope and tell me if it's alive or not.
Or dead.
And she said, yes, Mrs. Wintergate, you are right. It is alive.
It has movement.
It has movement. It is alive. So the next day she apologized very respectfully to Shanti in front of the whole class.
And she explained why it was alive.
So now, who are we? Are we going to choose to be our divine, all-loving? Now the saints and sages have walked this planet and said, we are God. We are God. All right? Okay, we say, yeah, all right, sure.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. What does
but
it mean?
This is, let's go to all loving, all inclusive, and all powerful. So.
What have we done with this power, this love, this
what
complete?
What have we been doing with it all of this time?
Believing,
with our power.
We've believed that we are separate.
We've
separate
listened
from God.
To the mind.
Separate from everything else. We believe that we're separate from our partners, our children, our parents.
We're going to share with you an experiment, something that Swami did with us, with the students, because the students wanted to see the mind. They wanted to experience their omnipresent self.
Well, actually, it happened this way. Swami was in the room. He was not in the room, but a lot of the students that were graduating, very highly intellectual, and we were in the room, and
They were discussing their omnipresent
the self. The Sat, Chit, and Ananda omnipresent self. Discussing it, right? And we just were quiet sitting. And Swami walks in the room. He said, you're talking about Sat, Chit, Ananda. What do you know about it?
Quiet.
Silence. He says, do you want to know your Sat, Chit, Ananda?
Do you want to experience it? Your Sat, Chit, Ananda? They said, yes, Swami.
He said, you always do. You just don't pay attention. And then he said, okay. He sat down, and this was the first part. There's a second part to this. Mm-hmm. He sat down and he said, okay, you guys want to play? Come on, you want to play? You want to experience?
He said, close your eyes.
Everyone,
just close your eyes. Now open them.
What did you see?
Colors, black.
Nothing.
Light.
Lights.
Nothing.
What did you see? Come on, somebody. Darkness, nothing.
Now Swami says,
lights.
Who was seeing this? Your eyes were closed. Who was perceiving this? And some wisecrack student said, the mind, Swami, the mind.
So Swami said, okay, what is the mind? He said, if there's only consciousness and the mind is just limited consciousness, it is also consciousness, but it's limited, and it is perceived by you as being separate, why? He said, because it's an interwoven, like a cloth, of thoughts and desires that are interwoven, that appear like the fabric of the mind. He said, it is a lie. It's just consciousness.
Were you thinking when you had your eyes closed? And they said, no.
No. So who was seeing? Who was perceiving that there was nothing? Darkness, emptiness, endless space, whatever. Duh. He said, that's who you are. That consciousness, that awareness that is eternal, forever, unending, and perfect. And it's separate from all objectified creation. All objectified creation, that means all name and form objects in this creation are separate or are not involved in this consciousness. But consciousness is every part of this creation. And that's why a wise person knows that only God exists and everything is only His will.
Her will, its will.
The will.
The will.
The divine will. So when we all say, I have choice, and this is what we are coming to right now before we go to the second part of this, Swami said, no, you believe you have choice. You don't really. You think you have free will. It's a myth. You do not have free will. Only God has free will. He says, but because you believe that you can choose what jeans you're going to wear, what you're going to eat, and what you like and don't like, you think you have choice. He said, those are not real choices. He said, Jesus Christ had a choice, and he took it. He said, you all have one choice, just like he did.
To live in your God state, your divine state, then you have choice. You're not ruled by the body, mind, consciousness.
You're not ruled by your reactionary patterns. Example, you like something, why? Because you have done it over and over again, and it's a habit. You are pre-programmed by likes, dislikes, society, parents, environment, and all kinds of other things. Those are what you believe are your choices. They're not choices. Your choice is only one, he says. You only have one choice, truly. And that is what Kalasu just said. You either believe you're the mind, body, ego, personality self, and then you express or react to creation from that point of perception, or you know yourself, or at least believe yourself, to be the divine consciousness encased in a human form, walking through a dream world in a dream body, having dream experiences, and you will then interact with this creation from that level of awareness. That's it. That's the only choice.
We are going to separate and gain power to our divine self.
Question, yes. They work for God. They are His instruments just like you and I and everyone else. There is no separation. Our belief system of right, wrong, good, or bad is programmed by our perceptions.
By this Maya.
By the Maya. It is all only a game or a dream in consciousness. Therefore, nothing is really happening. And that's what he first explained to us. Everything that we believe is real and happening is not happening. It is a dream experience. That means it's momentary. Think of it this way, to answer your question.
Okay, do you believe in karma? Do you think Hitler got away with it?
I'll give you an example from the Vedas. Ravana, the worst of the worst, eating Brahmins.
Who cut off Brahmins' heads
drank the blood. Merged in Rama. How come? How is that possible?
As reading the text, we understand that they were the gatekeepers originally.
You know, we understand the karma involved with it. And Ravana and his brother, they just decided to take 3 births instead of 100 births. But for the 3 births, there had to be the vilest
horrible
and evilest demons that walked the earth so that God couldn't come down and vanquish them.
And we're
as
not
the game.
Saying that's Hitler, but who knows? Until you are in your complete God state, Swami said, everything is perfect. So is Hitler not perfect?
So our perception.
And emotionally, I go, yes, Swami, yes, everything is perfect. And sometimes we want to say, it's perfect. But we can't deny that it's not perfect.
Let us explain why, because Swami explained it. Because it doesn't make sense to our emotion, to our mind, to our understanding or perception. It just doesn't make sense. How can somebody murder, killage, and rape and do all this stuff and it be perfect? I mean, come on.
But it has to be.
How? Why? That's the question. This is where it takes inquiry. And Swami says, listen, in the pure mind, and the pure mind in the Vedas, what the Vedas call the pure mind, is not purity. It's not having sexual thoughts or anything like that. Pure mind simply means an empty mind, a mind devoid of thought or feeling or identification of name and form. It is a pure mind. It is empty, endless, and perfect.
When Swami says past is history, future is fantasy, be here in the moment, in the present, it's a present. When we are in the moment, right here.
Fully conscious, aware, here, now, focusing.
There's no mind. It's silent because we're so filled with what is here in
happening.
The moment. Now, if you're sitting here thinking, did I leave the light in my room on? You just missed the moment. The mind just took you away.
And Swami gave, and we'll explain this to you in a second, but he showed us the difference between the mind and the awareness that we
are. And your divine God self that
right.
is going to regain the power over the mind.
But back to the question, to answer it fully. In this consciousness, in this pure mind state, there is the seed possibility of all possibilities, like a seed. You know, a seed has the full potential of the tree or the plant or whatever it has. There is a seed, a latent seed in this pure mind of all possible experience that we could ever imagine, dream of, or anything else. And the seed in this pure consciousness, movement of the mind, the first delusion, the Maya space, must grow and sprout. And that's why we have all the various experiences from mayhem, murder, pillaging, rape, fame, fortune, wealth, love, beauty, bliss, all those things. We have all of those experiences because the consciousness wants to experience them. Swami was very cute, very simple. You will catch this really easy. The moment that there is a lover and a beloved, that is two, Maya. In the loving, they merge and they are one. That is the truth. So stay in the loving always, and you're always in the oneness. That's why Swami said love is the shortcut, the simplest way. But love in our perception as humans has many different aspects. There's love for family, love for husband or wife, love for children, love for your car,
there's
love for
priorities.
Your animals. There are priorities. And there's always some tinge of selfishness with our loving. Unconditional or divine love only sees itself as everything. And the love of it is not that it can't discipline. Swami disciplines. He scowls, he frowns, he yells, he smiles, he hugs. He does all the things. But the love inside, the understanding that it is all only himself, never ever changes. And when we first came to meet Swami, that's what we perceived. And we dove into that love. It was like a pink ocean. We dove into it and we've never come out of it. We've lost ourselves in that ocean. Okay? Now, when we stay in that loving state, that's the shortcut, guys. All this other stuff that we are sharing, we are showing our ignorance by using words.
By trying to describe something in this Maya with words,
which is Maya and illusion.
That is beyond name and form.
Because consciousness is beyond the mind. But the mind is also part of consciousness, but it is limited consciousness. But we believe that our limited consciousness is consciousness. No, it's just the mind perception of consciousness.
We're going to share with you a practice that Swami shared with us. And for all I know, he's only shared this twice that I'm aware of. But I know nothing.
Once in 1969, there was a group of students in the room, and they were graduating, and they had pestered Swami. Swami, we want to know the difference between the self and the mind,
and
what is real and what is false.
And how to silence the mind.
What do we need to do? Show us. And he ignored them for the whole last year. Then at graduation time in the room.
He had us in the room with them again. It was so cute.
And he said, okay. Now I will show you. I will share something with you that all the sages and saints, this is what they all do to
practice. And hearing it and knowing, your mind is going to trick you and say, oh, I can do that.
I know.
And once you know, you think, oh, I don't have to practice it.
No,
really. Swami had made this so clear. And we are forever practicing. As long as you are breathing in these dream bodies, he said, you must practice. Because the minute the mind tricks you and goes, oh, I know that.
And he explained.
Maya just caught you.
He explained why you do not know, why none of us do know. See, because if we know something, we have to carry that around with us almost like a burden, like the whole world's on our shoulders. He said, but you truly don't know, because what you have learned yesterday or today
changes.
And tomorrow it may no longer apply. So you don't know.
It's a constant.
It's a constant, changing, forever adjusting creation.
So what he showed us is basically, again, peeling away our divine self from the mind consciousness. We're going to ask you to do something.
If
you want to play. We want you to look at your thumb. Now,
Don't do it yet. Just listen.
Not yet.
You can use a picture, a flower. Ramana Maharshi Swami said, use the star in the sky to do it. Paramahansa Yogananda used something else. Everybody uses something to do this particular practice. And he said, this is the end result of all meditations. People that meditate will end up having to do something like this.
Because usually when you meditate, you're using a mantra or some form of visualization that you are repeating.
You're using a name or a form. You're looking for Krishna, Swami, Rama in your visualizations.
This goes into the silence. And in that silence, you are in that oneness.
This takes you to the empty mind state, or as we said in the 60s, the spaced out, or in the 50s, the space state. Like the beatnik said, oh man, he's space.
Swami was cute. He said, we'll use our thumb since you carry it with you. Simple. We'll have you look at your thumb and not think anything. Not a thing. You can't think thumb.
Or
thumb,
Om Sai Ram,
or
Om Sai Ram.
No mantra. Nothing. And the minute the mind creeps in, Swami had taught us that the mind is now your tool. And when you're not using the mind, put it in the toolbox. When you require it, take it out of the toolbox.
And we'll explain what and how to utilize the tool.
So you're looking at your thumb. Sonny? Not yet. You mustn't think anything. And the minute a thought creeps in, like, what's that noise? Or what's this? Say, ah!
You will hear everything. You will still be aware of everything.
We would like your divine self to say, quiet. Get in the toolbox.
And everything that you hear or perceive, your body, your butt may be sore, anything, you don't pay attention to it. All you do is keep just perceiving
empty.
The thumb.
Perceive it, no thought, no words in the head.
And watch how the mind always wants to jump at something.
Now, for how many seconds?
We're only going to do it. Swami said, we only do this for 12 seconds. And he said, and if we can do it for 12 seconds and practice that throughout our day,
whenever you have
12 free seconds, anytime, don't do it when you're driving, please. Okay? You know, in the commercials between the TV shows, turn off the commercials and use your thumb. Much better practice than watching the commercial.
And you must be ruthlessly honest. You can think, oh, can't even do that.
Nothing.
Nothing. Empty.
It's spacing out, guys. It's as simple as that. What you'll do, at first, you'll be looking at the thumb, and then your gaze will kind of shift. It'll kind of spread, and it becomes like nondescript. It becomes like nebulous, nothing. That's what you want to go to. Okay?
So John was going to count. So
I'm going to count the 12
mind
seconds.
Mine can go 1, 2, 3, okay?
One. Nothing. Is it over yet? God. This is stupid. I don't want to do this. None of that stuff, okay? Or the girls say, hey.
Oh, I need a manicure. Nothing.
Oops, I forgot my nails. Nothing like that, okay?
So we'll have you look at your thumb and perceive it with no thought. And if a thought comes, toolbox.
This and is go where right you back use, to perceive.
Use your
it.
Force. Use your divine powers.
You're using your will force, okay? Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Okay, 12 seconds are up. Were you able to observe the mind?
How many times did you have to say, get in the toolbox?
Once, twice, three times, four?
Who's in control?
Who was in control? Your Atma consciousness, your awareness self. Now, we're still, guys, still understand we're playing in the illusion.
But we separated. Did you see the one that was disciplining the mind?
The one that was aware that there was a mind that was separate? That's what we're aiming at here with this. Now, if we practice this, truly, Swami said within 3 to 4 weeks, we will have an exquisite focus that will help us in everything in this world.
It's all the meditation, he said, you may ever have to do.
He said, after the 3 or 4 weeks, you will be able to do this for 2 minutes and 24 seconds, which is 12 times 12, I think. Math is not so good. But anyway, so if you can do this once a day for 2 minutes and 24 seconds, he told the students, this is all the meditations you ever need to do, and don't tell me again you meditated for 3 hours. He said...
And you couldn't study.
Couldn't study. He says, no. Illusion. He said, this is the end result of all the meditations that you will end up having to do. He said, now... All the meditation is beautiful. It's a wonderful way to discipline the mind, the body, the senses. But you want to be able to let go of all name and form in order to experience, and here we come to the fact, you want to experience the self, the pure mind, consciousness self, which we all do. We just don't pay attention to it. We pay attention with our mind reaching outward into the Maya, always reaching out, always looking for, always wanting, needing, changing, doing.
Keeping busy.
Instead of being.
And Maya is tricky. The minute you think, I'm quiet, I've got it, I can do it, and you forget or you don't bother anymore, Maya will creep up on you. She's very tenacious and try to...
trap you again.
Now, you've heard this 1,000 times. You're God.
You've always been God.
You can only and forever be God. There is nothing else that you can ever be. But, and this is where the problem rises for all of us, the but catches us by the back of the neck each time. But what? This is where we need to investigate. Swami said, all of sadhana is 90% investigation, 5% discrimination, after you investigate to discriminate what you investigated, find something, and then the other 5% is the practice that's something that you find that'll work for you. Now, he said, for each heart, there is a different religion and a different way to do it. Find your way, whatever it may be. There's only one end result, one beginning and one end, which are exactly the same. There is no beginning and no end. There's only the one playing the belief of the separation of the many. Now, if that is truly so, let's say we don't know it. We have heard it, we have read it, we have even believed it, but we have not had the full experience. So we are always crying, yearning, we're screaming. And that's why you are here now. Otherwise, you would not be here.
These bodies, along with Richard Bach, Indra Devi, Walter Nelson Cowan,
Jack Hislop.
We started the first center on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. And at that time, it was just part of the house was the living room. Richard had an office on the other side. And we had Swami's Sarva Dharma symbol. All religions were welcome. We sang songs in all religion. We shared and we worked on Swami's lessons and how we could put them in our practical daily lives.
In other words, we were a small family that was an extended family from our personal family, but we shared everything in that family. If somebody had a problem, if somebody needed help with something, we were all there to strengthen that extended family.
And we asked Swami the specifics. Should we do this? Should we do that? Should we do arati, Swami? And I'm not saying, and Swami said, yes, do arati. If it makes you happy, do it. If not, don't do it. He says, because we are in India. He says, 90-some-odd%
are Hindus.
So we practice this because it makes them all happy. Do what feels good in your country. Do what feels welcoming to all.
Sing in your language. Don't sing Hindi songs unless you understand them and like them. Sing a couple, yes, but sing other things. Sing in your own language. Your heart, if you don't understand the language, can't absorb.
So when Elsie asked us to become members of, it was at that time called
Councils of the Americas, the first organization.
We were name. With Swami, and we said, Swami, Elsie wants us to be members of this. What should we do? And he goes, oh, no politics for you.
No politics.
Other things with you. And we said, okay. So then when we were very active with the center.
So we asked him about centers. We did. We said, Swami, what about centers? He laughed. He said,
This is only Swami's center.
He said, the centers are for you, for the extended family.
For satsang, sharing Swami's message.
And then allow new people to come in and learn of the truth of Swami's message. Not to worship, not to do different things, but to share Swami's teaching. And he says,
we had asked him because Elsie said, well, they do arati here. We should do arati. Well, we said, fine. If arati makes you happy, that's beautiful. Do it.
We asked Swami.
Swami said, yes, you must all walk through devotion, but we must get past it and get to Swami's true core teachings of you are God. So be it. Think it. Walk it.
Live it.
So
anyway, what happened was, we asked Swami, do you want us to learn arati? He said, why?
Why? That is duality. I mean, he really always nailed it. No, that is duality.
He says, you are the light. You are the flame. What are you waving a light for?
So we said, okay.
You know, he said, it's a custom. And it's a wonderful custom.
Something else to share with you. When we do our prayers, we asked him, Swami, how do you pray? And he again said to us, you are God. Know this now. You are all powerful. Your thoughts, your words, your actions. Why do you think Swami tells us
watch
to control
your words,
our
watch
thoughts,
your actions,
our words, our actions? Because we are God.
Powerful.
And we are that powerful with our thoughts, our words, and our actions.
And we'll explain how powerful we are in a story. Continue.
Next time or now?
Now?
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, when he said... When,
it's only now. It's no other time.
When you bless your food as you're eating. And he told us that beautiful story when one of the sages would bless and devote everything to
he
God.
Said, he devoted it. He said, as Krishna, he said there was... And I forget the sage's name. He said he would always overeat.
Vishwamitra, I think.
No. One of them, I don't remember the name, but he said he would always share the food with all of creation and give it to me. He said, and I would always have a bellyache and would say, please stop eating,
because
please stop eating.
Too much.
He would eat so much because he would always dedicate it to Krishna. Krishna would get the result.
The bellyache.
And the bellyache, and the sage would feel nothing except very happy in the stomach, you know?
So Swami was very beautiful. He said, when you are eating your food, imagine in your mind, God self, taking the tool out of the toolbox, and imagine as you are eating, filling all bellies throughout all of creation. As your belly is being filled, all bellies are being filled throughout all of creation. You are now being all-inclusive, utilizing your power,
and all-loving.
You can do this with everything.
For example, at the mealtime, we usually say, and this is how we bless the food a lot of times. Kalasu does it slightly different. I do it slightly different. You will do it slightly different. But here's an idea.
Find your own invocation and give it the power.
And you know the song that we sing in the Hindi song that says the elements are the food and so on and so on and so on? That's the same idea. This is just for Westerners, for us, for our mental perception is, may all of creation come and join us as we're eating this food. May they enjoy the food and the love that it is, and may the energy produced from this food allow each and every one of us to know that we are God, have always been God, will always be God, and may all bellies be full as we're eating. And so it is, for crying out loud. Now, what have you done?
You've been all loving, all inclusive, and all powerful. You're being Swami.
You're being God.
And you're using your thoughts and your words. You're using them. The mind is not just rotating and laying them at Swami's feet. You're Swami.
It's not a reactionary pattern of saying, oh, now I have to bless the food.
Yes.
That's a reactionary
pattern.
Ladies,
you're out shopping, buying a new sari or a new dress, all right? And you're feeling really pretty when you try it on. Ah, may all of creation feel as pretty as I feel at this moment, and may their hearts be open to the truth that they are God also, and so it is. When you're paying for it, if you use a credit card, whoever touches this credit
money,
card,
anything.
You infuse it. Now, what I'm speaking are my thought forms that I'm infusing. Whoever touches this money, may their hearts be open to the truth that they are God, have always been God, and may their lives be filled with joy, love, and laughter. And so it is. Can you imagine how many people touch the money? Whoever touches the credit card, same thing.
Wherever your footprints walk.
You are being God.
Whoever sees your form.
What do you think Swami does when he comes out for darshan? He's doing the same to all of us. And he's saying to us that we have this same power. Wherever we go, whatever we're doing, we can be God.
To give you an example.
And the only thing you have to do is to remember to do it.
An example. We asked Swami once. We were in the room, and we were pretty fed up with the world situation. He said, Swami, enough of this. Just turn it all into paradise. You can turn earth into sky and sky into earth. Make paradise for us. This is enough already, you know? And he goes...
The planet needs your help, Swami. You
know, he goes like this. What can I do?
He looks so helpless. He says,
I can do it.
And he said it so helplessly. He goes, what can I do? He says, I can do it, but it will only last a short while because you
In 3 months, it'll be right back the way it is. Because you'll make it right the same way again with your attitudes and perceptions and your ideas.
Until all of consciousness is elevated to their God self.
He says, why do you think I raise students?
That's how much power we have, and we gave it to the mind. We said, mind, I'm bored, entertain me.
And it's done such a good job that we forgot who we were, and it's taken the power.